name is Rob Keefe. I'll be presenting our project with my colleague Brooke Lewandowski, who is from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. My other colleagues on the paper, Sandra Lane and Robert Rubenstein, are at Syracuse University, and Noah Webster is at Case Western Reserve University. We decided to undertake this paper when, during an earlier study, we found on birth outcomes, we found that many of our mothers in Syracuse who were teenage mothers had elevated blood lead levels. And we were very concerned about the persistent effects of or the relationship between childhood lead exposure and repeat teen pregnancy and tobacco use. As in other studies, the number of teen pregnancies has been going down around the country, but we were concerned with mothers who had repeat pregnancies. So although the incidence seems to be going down across the country, teen mothers who have had a child are much more apt to have second and third order children, and that was our concern. So we wanted to see the effects of the lead poisoning. Our hypotheses: among females, childhood lead poisoning is associated with repeat teen pregnancy, and among females, childhood lead poisoning is associated with cigarette smoking. In our prior research, we found that teens who give birth are likely to suffer from additional health problems, have repeat pregnancies, live in impoverished neighborhoods, live in poorly maintained housing, which increases the risk of lead exposure, and have limited access to health care. In Syracuse, we've had quite a problem with lead poisoning. It ranks the second highest prevalence in elevated blood level in New York. And also, the five zip codes that we were really interested in looking at had 76% of the total number of lead poisoning cases in Syracuse, and well over 7.5% of the entire incidence of elevated blood level in the state of New York. So we were, you know, really pretty concerned about this population. The highest risk exposures seem to be from old lead-based paint in dilapidated buildings that are primarily centered around windowsills, that when you open and close the windows, you are apt to stir up paint dust. Also, the lead that's in the soil around buildings that seeps into the soil, and in lead-tainted water. While the effects of lead exposure, many of you already know these, I'm sure, decreased intelligence levels, increased neurological impairments, premature sexual maturation, which, as you can imagine, is a particular concern for this study, impulsive or aggressive behavior, and delinquency. And by the way, a lot of these reports that were investigating the delinquency and sort of the conduct disorder issues have focused primarily on lead poisoning in males. So we're among the first to try and get some of the research going here among teen mothers. Neurotoxicity from lead poisoning affects the ability to plan, to learn from prior experience, control impulsive behavior, and use executive functioning skills. So again, this relates back to the repeat teen pregnancies. People who are, or teen mothers, who are really unable to gain from the experience of having an unplanned pregnancy and then the effects later of having second and third order pregnancies. And I'll turn it over to Brooke.
Okay. Comparing lead levels and birth rate by race and ethnicity in Syracuse. Our population, we focused on 15 to 19-year-olds, and you can see that the lead levels per microdecigram or microdeciliter are quite high among African-American teens, and the birth rate as well is much higher among African-American teens. We found that we didn't have enough data to focus on Hispanic youth, unfortunately, so our paper is just comparing African-American and white teens. So our Healthy Start database, we looked at 15 to 19-year-olds. We collected information on all births that happened in Syracuse from 1998 to 2002, and that captures about 75% of all mothers that are less than 20 years old. So the Healthy Start program in Syracuse is quite comprehensive, and we've been trying to get out to providers so that we really capture the high-risk pregnancies. We do routine screening of childhood lead levels. So these lead levels were captured in about 83, so it's one closet full of pieces of paper with women's names, and somebody has to go through manually and collect this data. But Syracuse tends to have a population that stays in Syracuse, so we do tend to find a lot of the women have stayed and reported tobacco use. And we do find that a woman had a high blood lead level as a child, we send a letter to our obstetrician. So we have a few measures that we looked at. We looked at race, childhood blood lead level, tobacco use, previous pregnancy, and then maternal age. We looked at univariate and bivariate analyses, and then we did a logistic regression that controlled for maternal race, age, and Medicaid use. So our sample is quite small, but we did end up with 536 pregnant teens. A little over half were African American, a little under half were between 18 to 19 years old. About 76% were on Medicaid, almost 40% had their second or higher order pregnancy, and we had about 37.5% were smokers. As I said, we have their blood lead level on small cards, and in 83, a blood lead level of greater than 20 was considered dangerous by the CDC, and so we have, so if it was more than 20, then we have their actual blood lead level, and if it was under 20, it just says okay. So that's why we had to stratify at that point. But now the CDC considers under 10 micrograms per deciliter dangerous, and so unfortunately we aren't able to account for that, but we are able to look at distinctions in blood lead level. So this is just a very busy graph that looks at all of our women stratified by a high and a low blood lead level. And you can see in the blue are youth that have a low blood lead level. And we have about equal proportions among race, age, repeat pregnancy, tobacco use, and Medicaid or private insurance. And we have similar proportions as well for those that are greater than 20 micrograms per deciliter. So essentially we have a sample that is comparable. We found that repeat pregnancy was associated with elevated blood lead level in mother's age. So older teens were more likely to have a repeat birth. And then tobacco use was significantly associated with maternal race, and that white females were more likely to smoke than African Americans. So we did a logistic regression. Our exposure was childhood blood lead level, and then we had two outcomes. We wanted to see if it was associated with repeat teen pregnancy and then tobacco use. Since I'm an epidemiologist, for the epidemiology types out there, we found the insurance type was an effect measure modifier, so we stratified on insurance type for the tobacco use. So looking at the outcome of a repeat pregnancy, we see that controlling for race, age, and Medicaid, youth with a increased blood lead level were 1.5 times more likely to have a repeat pregnancy than those teens that had a lower blood lead level. So an increased risk of repeat pregnancy of about 60%, and that was statistically significant. And then if we look at the outcome of tobacco use among Medicaid non-users, controlling for race and age, we find that the girls that had a high blood lead level were 4.2 times more likely to smoke than the girls with a lower blood lead level. And then among Medicaid users, we found that controlling for race and age, the girls with the higher blood lead levels were about 25% more likely to smoke than the teens with a lower blood lead level. So, what does this mean? In terms of repeat pregnancy, there are a lot of other factors that need to be considered. There are community factors, such as increased unemployment that could lead to teens becoming pregnant more than once, family factors, single parents, and I certainly grew up with my mother, who told me and my sisters if we got pregnant, she was going to kill us, and so it's harder to keep an eye on your kids when you're working three jobs. Individual factors such as school dropout rates, an increase in sexual partners, race has been associated, age, and developmental delays. If you have decreased cognitive ability and executive functioning skills, which we think are attributed to having an elevated blood lead level as a child, then that can also potentially be part of this picture of repeat pregnancy. But also, all of these factors can also lead to a residence in older housing with peeling paint that also then leads to children who have increased blood lead levels, and then we're creating kind of a scary cycle. Looking at addiction and addiction to tobacco, smoking and race are determinants of an elevated blood lead level among women of reproductive age. And then an early lead exposure is associated with a decreased ability to delay gratification, and alterations in the dopamine system and other neurochemicals. And there were a lot of rat studies being done, but then it's also been translated into a few studies with young men. And so we're seeing this, this association. And so if you have a decreased ability to delay gratification, then potentially that helps to increase your sensitivity to a tobacco addiction. So we have a few limitations. We have a small sample size. We only had 536 young women, and so that decreases our precision and our ability to find an association. Then we also, this is self-reported tobacco use and self-reported data, so that can create some bias. But then there were also several other factors in the community that could have been potential confounders in these associations that we weren't allowed to control for. We couldn't really control for poverty, community stress, residence location, and some family level factors, such as if you had a single mom or a single parent household. And so that would be something that we would be very interested in trying to continue to look at. But then how do we measure poverty, and how do we measure community stress? I know that there's some work in social epidemiology looking at poverty and its effects on different health outcomes, but it's a problem to figure out how to actually measure this correctly. And we would love to continue this research. We would love to be able to try and measure components such as poverty and try and do one of those multi-level analyses where we can control for community-level factors and try and move away from the models that we found in public health and looking at blaming the individual, but trying to look at community level and bigger picture factors that are relating to these associations.